If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
All right. I'm settled in. How about you in there, Reginald? Yes? Thumbs up? Return of the submarine sandwich, or the hoagie for our East Coast listeners. Where's that one from today? Firehouse. I've seen the commercials for that. Never been there. They toast the bun, don't they? Like Quiznos used to do? Well, they should. It's Firehouse, right? Hey, I think some of the money goes to firemen funds or something like that. Well, interesting. Good? Yeah? Well, thumbs up. You're always thumbs up, aren't you? Well, here's the important more thumbs up. Levels good in there? Yeah, they look good here. All right, let's go. Talent is ready. Write it in the book, episode 173. Here we go. Three S's, star, smile, strong. All right, here we go. Ready? Yeah, let's do this thing. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Posted here on WGNplus.com and anywhere that you regularly find your podcast. That's where you can find us. Your loyalty for your downloading and your scrolling and your clicking or whatever it is you do and wherever you find us is much appreciated. Thank you so much. And don't forget, wherever you do download this podcast on a weekly basis, every Monday a new episode is posted. Don't forget to subscribe to that platform, to rate us, and by all means, share the wealth. Yeah, it's fun to have your little something that's all yours, but we also want to reach as many people as we can. So don't be afraid to tell your friends or send them a link or just pass on a quick email or while you're chatting podcasts. Hey, have you ever listened to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic? Give it a listen. Your assistance in that word of mouth campaign is certainly appreciated as well. If you like what you hear, don't forget to go to WGNplus.com because I have a landing page there where you can listen to all previous episodes. You go to the entertainment section. There's the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find all previous 172 episodes, which means, do you need a calculator for this? Which means this is episode 173 of this very podcast. And once again, thank you so much for your continued loyalty. Last podcast, episode 172, I was speaking with our regular contributor, Emily Arminetti, in the Pop Culture Club segment, and we were going to discuss the new shows coming on this fall on television, both the networks and as well as all those other platforms out there, your streaming services and your cable, wherever. You know, I mean, there are so many places now to watch shows, but we were going to talk about that. And at the outset, I got on the subject of off the subject, I guess. And just it turned into an hour discussion on a whole bunch of things that were fun and illuminating and interesting, but we didn't talk about our intended topic. So I have the list here from last week, and so now a few of those shows will be are on already, so you can catch them whenever you want. But most of them will be previewing or premiering this week. So no harm, no foul. We had some fun last week, but now we'll get down to some real pop culture business here. So let's take a stroll to the Pop Culture Club. And so now we'll take a stroll to the Pop Culture Club with regular contributor Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
And as I promised, this week we are going to talk about the topic that we were going to talk about.
Right.
Which is the fall preview. Although I am very happy and I had a good time going way off topic. My gosh, what did we talk about in the last episode? We talked about parenting.
Planes. Pumpkin patches.
Pumpkin patches and parenting.
Yeah, parenting.
Oh, my gosh.
What didn't we talk about? You know what we didn't talk about is fall TV.
We did not.
That was about the only thing we did not cover.
Well, I thought we'd cover all the P's. Pumpkin patches, planes, and parenting.
Yes.
So we got the P's out of the way. Now we're on to the Q's.
Yeah.
But, of course, in the pop culture world, television plays a major role. And I have to tell you, it is every year, it is getting harder and harder and harder to keep track of what is out there. There are more platforms and outlets, it seems. Now, Disney is about to launch their own streaming service, which is going to effectively put all of the Disney classic films and recent films and Star Wars and Marvel, as well as new original programs produced by Disney, all in one place. And so now if you want to watch Disney, you can't go to any other platform except there. And CBS now to play into the Star Trek people. They have their own CBS Access, and they've got a show that's actually tempting me because I was a huge fan of The Lost Generation, and they're bringing back Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard, the captain, and showing him now 25 years later, kind of in semi or regular retirement, coming back to the starship. So they are certainly these big media companies are. It's so funny how you have these companies out of nowhere, like a Hulu or a Netflix, and they come up with an idea, and then the big guys wait 2 or 3 years, see what happens, and then they just do the same thing, and now we're flooded.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, like, on one hand, I want to say the world does not need another streaming platform, but on the other hand, I guess what Disney is doing, it's like they have a product that no matter what, people of a certain, especially people of a certain age, or like if you're a parent of two kids, I would say with all of the content.
Who would that be?
Maybe let's say ages 14 and under. If you're a parent of kids in that bracket, you're more or less forced to get, to buy into the Disney streaming because that's a lot of content that your kids are missing out on or want to see.
Well, no, I mean, I think, Disney is always been very shrewd. I think what's so interesting, though, is Walt Disney, the guy, sadly was very, by today's standards, he was young. He was only in his mid-60s when he passed away. I don't even think he, in his wildest dreams, could have thought, forget about the technology itself, because no one could predict what would, could happen like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he ever, in his wildest dreams, could have imagined that the catalog and, just the inventory that even he was creating in his relatively, 30 years or so, would still be a major profit center. And then obviously over the last 40 years in the newer things that Disney has made. But I mean, when you think about it, it's like, things like Jungle Book and Snow White and Lady and the Tramp, those are still Pinocchio. Those are still making money for this company.
Well, yeah, because even like kids now watch that stuff.
Yeah. Too. It's unbelievable. So I mean, from Disney's standpoint, while to your point, would you say, oh my gosh, do we need another, streaming service? Probably not. But if you're Disney, you're saying to yourself, wait a minute. I've got this compelling content. Why am I giving it to someone else?
Right, exactly.
You know, so
you
now
that streaming is, you know, I mean, it's been tested. People are into it. It's doing well. It's kind of the new way of consuming content. And so it's tried and tested. They don't have to deal with that.
Right.
But why leave money on the table if they don't?
Oh, yeah. Not even leave it on the table. Why give it to someone else? And now,
yeah.
I mean, what they have to do, which, you know, not Netflix sort of led the way by, you know, first becoming this DVD selling, you know, renting company. Really, it's interesting to see how the evolution of Netflix, just how it started by this kind of mail order renting service, to then, you know, making the first splash with House of Cards, with original programming, getting someone like Kevin Spacey to, you know, two-time Oscar winner to go and put some quality programming on this fledgling, you know, streaming service, which hardly anyone had. And now you see that that's the goal, is to not only have, you know, this catalog of things, but then also create new content. So Disney, wisely, you know, they own Star Wars. They're going to have, with Ewan McGregor, they just announced that they're going to do a series based on his Obi-Wan Kenobi portrayal from the Star Wars movies. So now that's a reason for Star Wars people to sign up.
Sure.
Regardless of whether you want to see Pinocchio or Lion King, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're going to have to want to see someone like Ewan McGregor play Obi-Wan Kenobi. Instead of that would have been, you know, 15 years ago, 5 years ago, that would have been a movie at the theaters.
Right.
And now it's a series on a streaming service. And I think sometime in the next month or so, they're putting out an original film, live animation, just like the Lion King was this summer, based on Lady and the Tramp. With real dogs. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's purely going to be on that, you know, their streaming service. Plus, it's going to be $5 a month. I mean, even if it's six, you know, like you said, as a parent, you're not going to spend, you know, what, $72 a year for that?
Let's put it to you this way. If you're, like, if we're going on a flight and we're loading up our kids' iPads with stuff to keep them busy on the flight, easily, they're at some point, we're going to rent something.
Right.
That's like, you know, it's more so for my daughter than my son, because she's younger. So, you know, you can't reason with them at that age. And you just need to get through this flight, you know? It's
right.
Like, okay, what is it? What do you want to watch? Well, she could get her heart set on a very specific movie, and that might not be, you know, because like Netflix, you can download stuff. If you have a Netflix subscription, you can download stuff that can be watched offline.
Right.
And I think Amazon Prime is the same way, but not so with every title. So if it happens to be like, let's say Frozen, for example, if she gets her heart set on watching Frozen on the flight, and that just happens not to be available on any of the platforms where we can just download it for free.
Right.
I'm paying $4.99 to rent that for 24 hours.
Exactly.
So why not just pay the $5
exactly
for the whole month?
No, you know, I mean, I'll tell you, I said this about 4 or 5 years ago, and I still think it's true. It may take a while. But, you know, I remember when you and I used to work in the technology world. Remember every so often we come upon these people called futurists? Do you remember, like, there would be these people. I used to pitch these people. There were these people that were called futurists. I don't know how they got this job. It was a made up job. They were early tech people, you know,
mm-hmm,
who
mm-hmm.
then said, you know, they sold their companies, they made their millions, and then it was their job to sort of predict what the future was going to be like, and mm-hmm. what technology was going to do. And I remember sitting with these people during interviews while they were getting interviewed by people, and you know, I don't think anything that they said came true, but it didn't matter because they had these names. But I really believe that, as the way that television is moving, and it's part of what of our discussion will be here today on the new shows, is network television, which obviously used to be the dominant, you know, medium. At the end of the day, I really believe it's going to be relegated, and it almost is right now, subtly, But I really believe there's going to come a time here when the network television will only be a medium where you watch big events like the Super Bowl and the Oscars and the Emmys. And you watch, you know, so big events, sporting events, entertainment events, and then basically reality shows and rebooted game shows.
Right.
Because that's, and if you look at ABC right now, that's pretty much what they are, aside from a few sitcoms. But yeah. when you look at the Emmy Awards, for example, I mean, as we'll talk about, I mean, every nominee in every category. And we'll talk a little briefly about it because it's this, it's coming in a couple of weeks. But as we talked about a couple of months ago when they were first announced, there's only like one network show, two network shows that are even nominated for any Emmys in the entire category. Everybody else is either cable or streaming.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just amazing. Think about what they're up against in terms of the freedom that writers and producers have when they're producing something that's on cable or on a streaming platform. You know, it would be hard to be a network, you know, because they've got rules and
right.
stuff that they have to follow.
Exactly. Yeah. And
a lot of that stuff doesn't apply then.
I just think that it's going to become, it's crazy to say that, but I really believe that, you know, as we're getting more segmented and everything has its niche, I think that network television's niche and what it will be used for mostly, and if you really look at the ratings, it's mostly major sporting events, you know, the bowl game, the college bowl games, you know, around the holidays. Like I said, the Super Bowl and the World Series and, you know, all the finals for all the sporting things, the Oscars, those big kind of events. And then, you know, you've got a couple of shows here and there. But, you know, right now, most networks, their biggest, I would assume, their biggest ratings getters are all unscripted reality shows like, you know, The Bachelor, Bachelor in Paradise, and, and these talent, you know, and all these bad...
Dancing with the Stars, which is coming back.
Right. Soon. That's what I mean. That's what I say. ABC really almost has that already. That's pretty much, and now, because they always have, and they also have all those new reboots of all the game shows from the 60s and 70s. So I really believe that that's going to go, because you just see, like, you know, like you said, the streaming services can, you know, by nature, can now, you know, give you all 10 episodes or 5 episodes, whatever it is, all at one time, where a network's strategy is to keep you stringing along every week, and people don't have that kind of attention span that networks used to be able to, you know, hand stuff out piecemeal. Oh, come back next week when we see who shot JR.
Right.
No one wants to wait. No one's waiting. People forget. You had to wait a whole summer to find out who shot JR. That would be unheard of today. You couldn't get away with it.
Well, yeah, because we're just too used to now being able to, like, immediately start the next episode.
And the funny thing, too, I wonder, too, is I really believe that at the end of the day, there is always, I there's no way to gauge this. It just seems to me that there is a finite amount of real quality creativity. A finite amount of truly...
Right, that's why they're rebooting everything.
Right, of truly talented writers and directors and actors, and especially people that, you know, come up with this stuff. I really believe there's a finite number, and it's always been a finite number. Now, the difference is, in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, when you only had three networks... People say, wow, that was the golden age. Look at all these great shows. Well, because there was X amount of talent, but there was only three networks. So there was a lot of content and really talented people fighting to get on these top three platforms, the networks, to get it out there.
Right.
But now today, as great as it is in terms of access, I still believe there's that same finite number, but now it's being stretched out. And so I think we're getting a lot of schlock, too. There's some really...
We are, but I think the streaming services, Netflix in particular, I think they're getting a little bit more selective. I mean, they're canceling a lot of stuff that you just think to yourself, why? Like, take, for example, Drew Barrymore did a show for Netflix.
Right.
It lasted for 3 seasons. It definitely had a following, and people loved the show. I watched it. I loved it.
What was it? The Santa Clara Diet? The Santa Clara Diet, right?
Yeah, Santa Clarita Diet. Yeah. And it was a really good show. Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant play husband and wife, and they are both really, really, like, so good in this. And it's very funny, and it's a very clever show. But, and, you know, and Drew Barrymore obviously is a draw. She's a huge A-list star. But, you know, for whatever reason, like, they canceled it. You know, and I think if Drew Barrymore can't keep a show that's actually a good quality show on Netflix, that tells me that they're starting to get more selective, and they're not afraid to pull the plug now if they don't think a show is performing or they're moving on to other things.
Well, as you could just see, my point is that you could really see that now the more streaming services that come on, they are more desperate they are in such of need of content. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot more documentaries, because they're like, okay, we need, okay, well, you know, what's something out there that no one knows about? And so now documentaries are very popular on streaming services, or a lot of these real life, you know, murder cases or intriguing, you know, open cases in real life, because it's,
well,
like,
you know, it's funny though that the documentaries, it's there, like, I mean, when you think about the whole water cooler thing where, like, you know, people gather around the water cooler at work and stuff, and they talk about whatever show everyone's kind of into, and how people can't really do that as much anymore with, like, you know, any kind of, like, series stuff, because we all watch at different times, right? Like, you and I can't really talk about the latest episode of Better Call Saul because, you know, I'm like 2 seasons behind, you know. But a documentary, you've either seen it or you haven't,
right?
And so, yeah, that kind of, I can see how that stuff is a draw too.
Yeah.
It's because people are able to actually connect if they have both seen it. It doesn't matter. It's not a series.
Right.
You don't have to be at a certain place in time at a certain point in the show at the same time.
Yeah, like I said, it's just a question of what are people, what can we get, you know, content-wise. So I think a lot of people, I mean, one of the things that I think that is now available now, which just, I think, premiered a couple of weeks ago on Netflix, is what you're also seeing is not only are they going back, like we were saying, they say, you know, they're rebooting, like, old game shows or rebooting shows like they have over the last, you know, several years with the Conners on ABC, uh-huh, and, you know, Full House on one of the streaming services, and, you know, Will and Grace. But they're also going back and even, like, finding old properties by well-known people and either creating sequels or backstories. And one of those is a new show that we can begin to at least, you know, let people know about is out there. Now, did you ever remember the movie The Dark Crystal?
Oh, my gosh, yes. We loved that movie when we were kids.
Now, that was a Jim Henson film that came out in about 82 or so, early 80s. It was a huge departure for him because it was, you know, he was known for the Sesame Street things and the, mm-hmm, Muppet Show and the Muppet movie. And it was mostly, you know, fun, lighthearted family entertainment, kind of goofy, kind of silly, educational, obviously, the Sesame Street things. But that, mm-hmm, was kind of the genre that, you know, Jim Henson, you could always be, you know, counted on to get a little laugh, and at times it was a little edgy, actually, but it was over the little kids' heads. And the,
right,
Muppet Show was funny. It was very slapstick, and I remember watching that on television. But then he puts out this Dark Crystal film, which was, you know, fittingly, very dark. Uh-huh. It was a whole new kind of fairy tale, completely, you know, started from scratch with a whole mythology and characters and stories, and it was, as I said before, very un Jim Henson like in that it was very dark, and it wasn't overly traumatic or scary, but it certainly was much different than anything And
right. And it, and honestly, like with kids, especially little kids, it doesn't take that much to scare them.
Right.
You know, right. Like something can just be like a little bit creepy, which the dark, I mean, we love the Dark Crystal. I loved it.
Well,
but yeah, it can be like, that can be scary for us.
Yeah. Well, there's these kind of, you know, vulture looking, villains called the Skeksis. And then there was the Elfins, who were these nice little, you know, cherub-like little creatures, and they were the good people, and they had to get this Dark Crystal. Now, the funny thing is, with the Dark Crystal, as much as you say you love that, when the Dark Crystal came out and was released at theaters, it was such a flop that it almost bankrupted Jim Henson's production company.
Right.
I mean, so that's what's ironic, is that this movie, when it was released to theaters, was panned or whatever. It did not do well at the theaters at all, to the point of almost, you know, financial ruin. But then it found another life on cable television and on VHS tapes when they became available by the mid-80s and late-80s, when cable and VHS tapes really took over. And kids like your age were discovering this. Did you see it first in the theater or like
no.
on right?
No, we definitely watched it on TV.
Right, exactly. And suddenly, without the expectation of a movie, without the legend of Jim Henson, which this movie was being viewed at when it was reviewed, a lot of other things were coming into play. You know. As in terms of the critical response, oh, it's Jim Henson, and you know he's not good at doing dark, or oh my gosh, where's Big Bird? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The younger people then who discovered this 5 or 6 or 7 years later, you were just watching it as a pure movie,
right?
As a pure sense, without any outside forces, without any kind of outside biases, and it really became a cult classic. And so Netflix now, I believe, is planning to continue it, but the first season of a new Dark Crystal, I believe it's a prequel actually to the film that the original film that came out in the '80s. But now that I think premiered a couple of weeks ago on Netflix. So if you are a Dark Crystal fan, perfect example of how Netflix really appeals and does have, like you said earlier, sort of has the freedom that network television would never think of, finding this relatively obscure but cult classic and saying, hey, go nuts.
Yeah, I need to check it out, because I think if it's, as long as it's not like too scary, then I would like my kids to see it.
Yeah, and you know? Jim Henson, I remember, and I believe I've seen a trailer for the new thing, and I remember this at the time, and I've always been a fan of Jim Henson's. At the time, he said that Dark Crystal, and for many years after, he said the Dark Crystal was the one project that he was most proud of in his entire career.
Oh.
Yeah. So in terms of the look of it and the design and the costuming, it's all puppets. But my goodness, it really is, in terms of the detail that they put into that, it really is magnificent. And like I said, I remember seeing it when it first came out. And so I definitely want to check that out, too. But that is available on Netflix. So why don't we talk about some of the shows, either returning or new ones, that you're looking forward to seeing this this fall?
Okay. Well, I will say that I have kind of two number ones that I'm really
well, that's really, there's no such thing.
It's a tie.
It's 1A and 1B.
1A and 1B. Okay, well, how about this then? I get to have one, a number one returning.
Oh, show, okay.
And then a number one brand new series.
Okay, you know what? There's no rules here, so that's fine.
Good, okay. So my number one returning show will not be a surprise to you, because I rave about it all the time, and that's American Horror Story,
right.
1984. We talked about that like maybe a handful of episodes ago. That is premiering on September 18th on FX. And this, I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's going to be, I guess the theme for the season is kind of a, it's going to be like 1980s horror slasher film type theme.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, like Friday the 13th. Yeah, like Friday the 13th or Freddy Krueger or Nightmare, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween, all those kind. And it does take place at a summer camp, which is the exact setting for Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that's just like a classic 80s slasher film trope, is like the summer camp, right, you know, setting. So, and as we know, like, I mean, this is an anthology series, American Horror Story. Every season, it's a different theme. You have a lot of returning actors, but they're playing completely different characters, which is, you know, one of the things I love about this show. But, you know, as we know, like with Ryan Murphy, there's always some kind of a twist to it. So yeah, that's one that I'm got the calendars, you know,
and
set,
and from what I've
DVR set,
and from what I've read, this, unlike most past seasons, to your point about the anthology concept and using the same actors in these very every year a different theme and a different completely different story, while there are a few returning actors from the American Horror series, because of the age group, this is all young teenagers at a summer camp. This is the first time that there's really not a huge contingent of the same character, same actors playing in the new series. And this, there's going to be a lot of new people that you have never seen before. So it's going to be interesting from that standpoint too.
That's right. And he's also, like, in true Ryan Murphy style, he's also bringing in some of his regulars in other, like, who have not been on American Horror Story yet, but have been on, like, for example, Glee, you know, right, one of his other series.
Right.
So yeah, that'll be, that's one that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, that's this week, and I'm looking forward to that, definitely.
Yeah, and then, so then the new one,
yeah, what's
that? I'm really looking forward to
is what?
This is Netflix, premiering on September 27th. Have you heard about The Politician?
Wait a minute.
Oh, crinkle, crinkle.
Crinkle, crinkle. Yes, I have that on my list.
Of course. So this is also Ryan Murphy, right?
Right, yeah.
But this is his first Netflix show, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah.
So this could open up a whole new world if Ryan Murphy starts creating more content for Netflix and having that creative freedom that you don't always get. Although FX, I think, gives them more. FX seems to be a little looser on you know, on the standards. And
so what is this about?
So The Politician is about a high school student who's running for student body president. But, you know, of course, in Ryan Murphy fashion, I'm sure there's going to be a twist. It looks like it's going to be on the darker side from the trailers that I've seen. And he has pulled together a cast of, like really impressive talent for this. It's Gwyneth Paltrow, Jessica Lange, Zoe Deutsch, who's a young actress, but she's very good. I've seen her in a few things. Judith Light, Dylan McDermott. So, you know, this is already off the bat. It's like, well, I'm interested in seeing this because, first of all, we've got a great cast.
Right.
It sounds a little bit like the plot of, remember that movie Election, Reese Witherspoon,
right,
and Matthew,
yeah,
Broderick from many years ago?
Yeah.
It seems to me like this is a kid who wants to win this election at all costs based on the trailers I've seen. And the other thing I think is interesting about this, speaking of the cast, I mean, Jessica Lange has been part of, you know, the Ryan Murphy troupe for some time. Although I think she's taken a step back from doing American Horror Story, but Gwyneth Paltrow,
right?
I mean, he's brought now. I believe her husband is involved in this in some way. I think he's. I mean, he's like Ryan Murphy's production,
right? That, yeah, he's the co-creator and co-producer on American, yeah, Horror Story.
Yes, but so they're essentially bringing her out of, I don't want to say retirement, but like she has taken, talk about taking a step back. You know, she has taken a step back from acting altogether because she's been running her Goop lifestyle brand. And so I think this will be interesting too, to see someone like her back on the screen. Cause I've always thought she's very talented, and it's a little bit of a shame that she's not doing much acting anymore. But this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, that's definitely on my list, and certainly American Horror Story, both of those. And it's funny that you're clearly a Ryan Murphy head.
Well, I just can't help it. I think he produces some really great stuff. So,
yeah. And yeah, so there's no doubt. Like I said, those were two are on my list. Now, what I think is going to be interesting, we talked about Better Call Saul, which is obviously a sequel based on Breaking Bad. And it was just announced a couple of weeks ago, kind of surprising to a lot of people, that they were able to get this filmed pretty much under the radar screen. But let's see, what's the date here? On October 11th, once again on good old Netflix, the sequel to Breaking Bad is coming on, called El Camino.
Oh, really?
And so on Netflix, October 11th, and, you know, Vince Gilligan directed and wrote it, and Aaron Paul is in it. There is going to be a question. So it's going to question, the sequel is, you know, how does his character, the young guy, go forward now? What does he do?
You mean Jesse?
Jesse. And yeah. So now the question is, how do we bring, we have to bring in, you know, Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how, maybe they'll do it in flashbacks or.
Maybe, but see, again, you and I have, I don't know, can we even talk about the finale of Breaking Bad? I don't know. Not everyone has seen it, maybe. Yeah. You and I think, have different opinions. Just like with The Sopranos, I think we have different opinions of what the of the fate of Walter White in that.
Why, you don't think he died or you do think he died?
Well, you don't see him die.
Right. No, I know.
I
yeah.
think that leaves it open to interpretation.
Yeah, no, there's no question that there, you know, he's got to be in it. I mean, you can't have a Breaking Bad without Bryan right. Cranston.
Now, so, the interesting thing is that this is going to be on Netflix and not AMC, because Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, they were AMC. Yeah. I don't know, maybe again it's the creative freedom thing that appeals.
Yeah, who but knows? So that's, it's called Breaking Bad El Camino, and that's on October 11th. And that's another one that certainly is one that that I'm looking forward to. Now, I know that it's not necessarily hip to like things on regular television, but I would say that I've always been a fan of country music, and Ken Burns, who has done some of these amazing multi-episode documentaries going back to the Civil War and baseball and Prohibition. And about 2 or 3 years ago, a very gripping series on the Vietnam War.
Yep.
Has I'm very surprised and very intrigued that he has used country music as his next topic. It's going to be 8 episodes, 16 hours on PBS. It's just started. In fact, the first episode, when we're going to be posting this on yesterday, September 15th. And it is going to trace, I mean, country music right now, ironically, next to hip hop and rap, has overcome rock and roll as the most popular, genre out there. And so what I think is really interesting is going to be a whole lot of younger people who may have gotten turned on by Garth Brooks and later by Jason Isbell and some of these other people, you know, and Brad Paisley and some of these other people that are popular now. But what's going to be very cool about this is that it's going to trace the original roots of country music back to its core. And so younger people will hopefully get a nice little history lesson and understand who people like Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn and Tammy Wynette and some of these Patsy Cline. And some of these, just major influential and popular artists in the country world, who they are and the place that they play and the role that they play and the influence that they play. So I'm looking forward to definitely seeing that through, and that's on PBS. I don't know if a lot of people even know that they have a PBS station, but you do. And check that one out. If you love music, you're going to want to see that. Now, in your list, do you have any network shows?
I do. I have a network show, but it's not new. It's returning.
Okay, what's that?
Actually, no, I say that, but I have two. Right. One new and one returning. Okay, so I don't know if you've ever watched this, but I've been talking about it for a while. Have you ever seen The Good Place?
You know, I started with The Good Place. It's got Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. It was a very interesting concept where this really kind of snarky, rude woman dies, and goes supposedly, makes him, there's a mistake made, and she thinks she got into heaven, but she doesn't belong there. And Ted Danson is kind of her guardian angel, supposedly. And then in the
he kind of runs heaven.
Yeah. And that's then in like one of the great twists in television history,
well,
it turned out, well, hey, I'm sorry. This has been on for 4 years already.
Okay, fine.
It wasn't heaven after all. And it was almost like so it's really like a, it's like a weird, it's a combination. There's a lot of bright colors. It's like Pee-wee's Playhouse, Twilight Zone, you name it. This is a crazy kind of show, but it certainly has a very unique and creative and imaginative, you know, perspective. And Ted Danson has done a great job playing this kind of dual role, and everybody loves.
He's always so good.
I mean, you know, the funny thing is, and that's funny you say that, because I'll tell you, you know, when he came on Cheers so many years ago, he was a relative unknown, pretty much. And he seemed very one-dimensional. You know, he really did seem like he was Sam Malone, you know?
Well, I think Sam, I loved him on Cheers.
No, my point is, if you think about his career, post-Cheers, I'll be honest with you, I like his work after Cheers more than I like Cheers. I think he's amazing on the Larry Sanders Show, kind of playing a quasi-version of himself. He was great in the other anthology series, which I hope comes back, Fargo. He played a very kind of complex sheriff in that. He's made some amazing films. He was in, what was he in with Glenn Close? Damaged. Did you ever see?
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, he was in Damage. I mean, he's had some great movie roles, and obviously he had the big hit, you know, Three Men and a Baby and stuff. So he's really had a very cool career, and yeah. So you're a big fan of The Good Place. I have to be honest with you. I started watching it, and it got a little too goofy for me, and I quit on it.
No, it's not. It's so funny though.
Really,
the characters on that show.
Do I have to go back?
Huh?
Do I have to go back and start again?
I think maybe you should.
Yeah, because I gave up.
It has never let me down. We'll
really?
Put it that way.
All right, because it was getting a little too far-fetched. And to be honest with you, I wasn't even around when the big switcheroo happened.
Oh, well, see, that's kind of a big, that's a big part of it.
I know. So I'm going to have I've been thinking of going back because I think this is the final season also.
It is. Well, I'm very, it's bittersweet because on one hand, I'm happy for it to come back. It's something I'm definitely going to tune into. You know, there's nothing worse than when you're like watching a sitcom and you don't laugh like at all, you know, and I feel like I'm always laughing out loud at this show. And so I'm excited for it to come back, but at the same time, it is the final season.
Right.
So.
And it was nominated for, I think, Ted Danson and Kristen Bell. Was she nominated? I know he was.
I don't know, but she's really great.
And the series itself was nominated. So if you haven't seen The Good Place, you can certainly go back. I think it's on Netflix.
I'm sure, and watch the previous season.
And then when is that premiering? Do you know?
Yeah, so this is September 26th, and it's on NBC.
Right. And then what's your other show on the networks?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm like geared up for this, but I was surprised to read that Patricia Heaton's coming back.
I know. Talk about she has nine lives on television.
I tell ya.
What's this thing?
She's had some good between Raymond and The Middle.
Yeah, now she was briefly on a show, if you might recall, came and went. Kelsey Grammer had a very quick little show in between Frasier. After Frasier that she was on, and it came and went very quickly. But then she hit The Middle, and that was on for six or seven seasons. And this one's on CBS, I think. Isn't it called like something about Carol or something?
Yeah, it's called Carol's Second Act. And I guess she plays like a retired teacher who decides to like finally pursue her dream of becoming a doctor. Now, I feel like, I mean, I loved her on The Middle. I just thought she was great. You know, she played this kind of like,
all right,
constantly, you know, this like totally like, and she was like a mom, but she but she could never stay on. It's like, she was, you know, like a housewife. Like she just nailed it. You know, it's like she played kind of like that mom. You know, like,
oh yeah, she was an Oprah, but she was like an Oprah mom, and she wanted to talk things out, and yeah, you know.
But she just, you know, I mean, she was really fun to watch on that show, and so I think hopefully, I mean, I think that it sounds like a decent plot starting point. She's very, you know, obviously she's had a lot of hits and people really like her and she's a great actress. So we'll see. It sounds like it.
I think I will
watch the, you know, like I said, I'm not really like, really excited for this to come out, but I was interested when I read that she was going to do this. So,
and from my standpoint, I've got a few on the networks that I probably watch more network TV shows than you do.
I'm sure.
And I don't know why, but I've always been a fan of Modern Family. It's certainly not as sharp. The pace and the puns and the looking at the camera, which was so unique 10 years ago, is kind of lost its luster. But I've been so invested in it, and I still like a lot of the characters. And I think the acting is really good on it. But this is the final season. And so we'll see what happens to the Dumfies, and all the other the Cams and the other characters. So September 25th, the final season of Modern Family. Now, there's two shows, and I'm looking that at least in the descriptions on the networks that I'm looking forward to seeing. Now, one is called Emergence.
Okay. Yep. I've seen the.
And it's on ABC, and it premieres on September 24th. And it's kind of a mystery fantasy. Somebody is missing. I think it might have some aspects of Lost in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm going to at least try it out, and we'll see. There was a show, Manifest, that was on NBC that was on last year about a plane that disappeared for 5 years and came back. Do you remember hearing about that show?
I do.
Yeah, and so I started to watch that. That has aspects of Lost, only it's a little more cornier. It almost feels like a mix between Lost and that Angel show that what's her name was on, that Downey was on. So, you know, Touched by an Angel. It seems to me like it's a connection between Touched by an Angel and Lost.
That was like super corny.
Yeah, so that's coming. Actually, Manifest is coming back in 2020, but I sort of lost a lot of my interest in that. But it was an interesting plot. I think once again, like so many network shows, that was a miniseries. That was five episodes tops. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting, concept of this plane that all the passengers were alive. And they thought they were only lost for 10 minutes, but they were actually gone for 5 years.
Yeah, very Lost-like.
Yeah, so in Twilight Zone-ish. So it was. So that's what compelled me. So I'm not really sure about all the details on Emergence, but there is some kind of mystery. A girl is missing, and so it's a mystery thing, so we'll see. And there's another one on CBS, which debuts on September 26th, called Evil. And this is another one that has some kind of supernatural things. But interestingly, it deals with a priest. And so I'm interested to see how are they going to do it. Like, is it a question of are the supernatural phenomenon, you know, tied to religion? So I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know, at least at the beginning. Like, I did give a shot a couple years ago when they did a sequel to The Omen. Oh, no, to The Exorcist with Gina Davis. Remember? There was a TV show, on Fox. And it turned out that Gina Davis was the Linda Blair character grown up.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So it was,
I mean, that's odd casting.
Yeah. But it was kind of interesting.
Gina Davis is great. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know how you go from Linda Blair.
Yeah. It was an interesting concept that, you know, once again, lost some steam. So, when I'm looking at the, this is another one. Now, I don't know if you were old enough or not. Did you ever watch L.A. Law?
Of course.
Okay.
Corbin Burnson.
Yeah, I loved L.A. Yeah, I loved L.A. Law. I mean, it really was a phenomenon in the 80s. David E. Kelly.
I mean, I don't think I would. Look, my parents were watching it, so we would watch
right.
it. You know, I don't think I would have been like, oh, I think I'll get into L.A. Law. It was more like watching 21 Jump Street right, if right. I were choosing the channel, you know. But yes, I remember L.A. Law, and I did like that show.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
So now I just saw this in September 27th. On NBC, Jimmy Smits is back as a lawyer.
Oh, okay. Very LA Law like.
Yeah. In fact, it's even in the title. It's called Bluff City Law.
Oh, all these names for these.
Yeah.
See that? When I hear that name, I'm like, that sounds like it's going to be terrible because it's just a terrible name.
I know. Well, I mean, so Bluff City must be some small little town. But right. I wonder, I'm watching this saying, so is he playing Cifuentes? Is he playing, you know, like, this. The same character, or is he just playing a lawyer, you know, that's going to be probably very similar to his character on L.A. Law?
Yeah, good question. See, now you have to tune in to see.
Yeah, so I'm going to at least give that a shot just for old time's sake.
Right.
And then, now, have you watched The Conners, the sequel to Roseanne?
I did, yeah.
How did you like the second season without Roseanne?
You know, I thought it was fine without Roseanne. I actually thought that they had to deal with her sudden departure from the show. And I think they, you know, like given those circumstances, they actually did a really good job.
Yeah, I think that there's a strong, I mean, definitely the show now is carried by John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf, and they're both.
No way. I disagree. I think it's totally. What's her name? Who plays Darlene? Sarah Gilbert.
Well, it's her show, but I just think that they ground it. If John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf were not there, to ground that show, with just Sarah Gilbert and the rest of that cast, it can't last. I understand the focus is on Sarah Gilbert and her character, but John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf do add some gravitas to the show.
Yeah, you can't do the show without them.
No,
there's no way.
That's what I mean. And I'll be honest with you, as we always should be. I love when people say that. I'll be honest with you. Well, what are you? Have you been lying before? I always say that, and I shouldn't say that. That's verbal acne. That's not good. I watched Roseanne in its heyday, and I have to tell you, without Roseanne on it, I really misjudged the impact that she had on that show. I don't necessarily think that she was an amazing actress. A lot of times she didn't look like she knew her lines. And a lot of times it looked like she was laughing.
No, because she's just playing herself.
Yeah, but she even looked like she was laughing, you know,
right,
like at the jokes.
But Jerry Seinfeld used to do that too. So.
Well, he was just a bad actor. But so I really think that while I liked the show, I think there's enough compelling characters and enough of a compelling kind of story with that family that we know. And they've added some nice little new twists in there. But at the same time, I did miss Roseanne. Those little snarky remarks and just her presence there really did make a difference. I enjoy watching the show, but it's really too bad that she got, you know, just embroiled in this off-screen, controversy, because she really had the world right where she wanted it. She came out of nowhere. She's been gone for almost 20 years. They do this reboot. It gets amazing ratings. Everybody suddenly, for all her quirkiness and all her craziness, mostly again off screen, the American public just completely embraced her and that show immediately when it came back. And it's a shame that she had to, you know, once again, just self destruct.
Yeah,
because while the show I think is a quality show without her, I do believe it's better with her.
But this is what. But this is the thing, though. If you can take a show called Roseanne,
right,
and get rid of the Roseanne character,
yeah,
and it's still good,
yeah,
then you've got a really talented team.
Oh, there's no question. You know. Yeah, there's no question. I said, you know, I mean, the fact that Laurie Metcalf, who has gone on to become a huge, you know, force, she's won Emmy Awards, she's won Tony Awards. She's been
she had that Oscar nomination.
Yeah, she's been on the big
show. Yeah. Most people thought that she had that in the bag.
And, right. Yeah.
You know, but so I mean, that she's was been, a close one.
She, yeah, she's been know. All over the place. And everybody who works with her, and she's, you know, a Chicago product from the Steppenwolf Theater here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So you've got someone like her. The fact that she would take time out of a career that is in huge demand on stage, on screen, on television, and still be committed to that, says a lot about what she feels about that show. And someone also like John Goodman, who really didn't need to do that show.
No.
And yet they came back for it.
Well, and you know who they're bringing in this season, who I think appeared toward the end of the last season, but I think will play a bigger role, is Katie Sagal, who is best known for Married with Children.
Right. She's going to play. She's going to sort of be now that Roseanne is dead, she's playing someone that's going to sort of be going after Dan Connor, the John.
She's, yeah. William, she's like a, you know, an acquaintance of his from way back. And I think she's like now.
And then also
the love interest.
And then Johnny Galecki is going to maybe come back as well from Big Bang to play, Sarah Gilbert's, you know, kids, you know, her ex-husband.
Yeah. I mean, he was in a handful of episodes.
Right, but now that he doesn't have to be on Big Bang, he might be on more regularly, too. That was kind of the thing. So those are kind of the shows on the network that I'm looking forward to, although I'm still watching The Blacklist. I don't know if you ever watched that show. I really like James Spader.
I know what it is, but I don't watch it.
Yeah, I really like James Spader. I think he plays a pretty cool thing in that. I was never a huge fan of Big Bang. I used to watch it. My wife liked it more than I did. But I have to say, I have gotten into the young Sheldon show, which is based on the James Parsons character. Because there's this actor, and if you ever watch Big Little Lies, didn't you? On HBO.
Yeah, of course.
Well, the kid. Yeah, well, the kid who played Zeke, was that his name? The little kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's young Sheldon.
Was it Zeke? Was that his name?
No. It was David Bowie. What was it? It was Ziggy.
Oh no, it was Ziggy. Yeah, Ziggy.
Yeah. Because it's named after David Bowie, character. But so Ziggy is young Sheldon.
Oh, okay.
And for a young actor, he really has done a great job. He's clearly watched The Big Bang Show and picked up all the key idiosyncrasies of that Jim Parsons Sheldon character. And he's done it. The show flies by in 2 seconds. You're not going to roll over. It's not breaking any new ground at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I have to say that Annie Potts, who was, you know, in Ghostbusters and on Designing Women, she's on it.
I used to love Designing Women.
Yeah, and she plays the grandmother, and she does a great...
Oh, God. Do you know how depressing that is to me that Annie Potts is playing the grandmother?
Oh, I know.
And it should be depressing to you, too.
Oh, believe me. I just recently, in a two-day span, a couple of weeks ago, I saw two of my favorite guitarists of all time. I saw Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits. Uh-huh. And then the next night in Milwaukee, and the next night in New York at Madison Square Garden, I saw The Who in Pete Townsend. And when Mark Knopfler stepped out, even my wife, she went, whoa. Because she hasn't seen him since, you know, 1985 with Money for Nothing and the headband on.
Right.
You know, and he's got this big stomach, this giant head, bald head.
Oh.
She's like, who is that? Right. She's like, thank God he has that guitar. And he comes out with this linen shirt that was all wrinkled. I'm like, you know, can't you iron the shirt before you came out?
Yeah, I mean, surely there has to be a whole team of people backstage. Yeah.
Still an amazing guitarist. But when he walked out, it was like, oh my, because he's 70 years old.
Ugh,
and man. I remember Sultan's a Swing when I was a freshman. in high school. You know what I mean? And then I love The Who, and Pete Townsend comes out, and him and Roger Daltrey, I mean, Roger Daltrey's always been in very good shape physically, and he's 75, and he's still, you know, very muscular and you know, very tight for a 75-year-old, and his voice
was... You gotta work on it. Yeah. He works at it.
Yeah, you know? And Pete Townsend was always a little doughy, and he's a little doughy, but he's not out of shape. He's always, you know, he's tall and lanky, but he's got a little... But I had to laugh because... He's singing this song, you know, mostly Roger Daltrey sings, and all of a sudden, this is a song that he sings, and all of a sudden, he looks over to his brother, who plays, who's in the band now, and playing guitar. He forgot the words!
Oh, no.
And I'm like, are we... I said, oh, my God, between Mark Knopfler looking like somebody's uncle at Christmas who decides to play the guitar for everybody... And then Pete Townsend is forgetting the words to the songs. I'm like, oh my God. That's why I've said, people, if you have any favorites from the classic rock era, go quickly.
Right.
Because I don't know how many years they have either physically, that mortally, physically, or you know, mentally.
I know. I hear you. But I will say, I saw Tony Bennett.
So did I.
Live when I lived in Brooklyn. So it was, you know, I mean, I've been here for 4 years. So this was at least 5 years ago. Okay. So he's 93.
He's
now,
93. I just saw him this summer.
So he was 88 years old. And I have to say, he was great. He sounded great. He had a little pep in his step.
I'm telling you, I just saw him this summer. 93, he came out at Ravinia, and to your point, he came out skipping.
Yeah, and you know what? I had really good seats. So when I got the tickets, it was at Radio City Music Hall, and there was a mistake. Like, it was some weird glitch in the system. I think it was like Ticketmaster or something. Somehow allowed me to get wheelchair accessible seats, you are not. There's like, they have a way where I don't even remember exactly how it worked. But in any case, I got these, and then like somehow I figured it out, and I contacted Ticketmaster, and I was like, I don't know how I ended up with these, but am I going to be allowed to sit in these seats? Because I don't need a wheelchair accessible seat. And they were like, oh no, we are very sorry. That was a glitch in our system. They're not going to let you sit in those seats if you're not with someone in a wheelchair. However, we will get this figured out. We will make sure that you get tickets that are just as good, because the wheelchair accessible seats were literally like in the front row.
Yeah.
And I was so amazed that I got these seats. And I did, to be fair, I mean, I was like logged on to a pre-sale like the minute they went on sale. So I would have gotten good seats anyway. But the problem is, because the system gave me those seats, I was, you know what I mean? I wasn't there. Yeah. I'm stuck. And now a whole bunch of seats have sold out.
Right.
So now they promised me, we will make this, we assure you we'll get you good. So true to their word, I mean, I wasn't in the first row, but they did get me second row. And I was like in the center. I could see him. I mean, he was like right in front of us. Yeah. So,
he's still.
You know, I can honestly say like.
No, he's still good. No, he put on a great show. 93. He came stepping out. He was smiling. He did that. You know, where he hugs himself when the crowd, and he's like, all right, I love Ravinia.
Right. Here comes the Tony Bennett.
This is my 40th show. All right. Let's swing.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, but my point is, you know, but Tony Bennett is not a rocker. These rockers lived a completely different lifestyle than Tony Bennett
he
did.
He used to be a drug addict.
Don't yeah, I know, but. But there was a lot more.
They're really hard.
There was a lot more going on.
Well, we can't. I feel like we would be remiss if we did not mention in this roundup. I don't even know if you know about this. Surprised you haven't.
Well, I still have more on my list. I still have more on my list.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I just found this out the other day, and I'm like, I can't believe there's not more hype about this. They are going to reboot Mad About You.
Is that for sure now? Because I know there was discussions about that. So that's for sure?
It's happening November 20th.
Wow.
But it's a 12-episode run, and it's on Spectrum.
What's that?
So it's not, I don't even know. It's like a, I mean, I
what I think is Spectrum? It's
like, I don't know. I mean, the name of my cable company is Spectrum, but I didn't know that they had like
Wow.
I'm assuming it has to do with that. I don't know.
Well, it's because, you know, it's funny because Paul Reiser has popped up in a few different shows. And he's most recently, oddly enough, in Stranger Things, which was interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was one of the, in season two, he's one of the menacing kind of psychologists.
Government guys.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously, I mean, Helen Hunt has won an Academy Award. She hasn't been in a lot of different things, but she's been in, certainly has become a major movie star. So that will be interesting to see. But I don't know where the hell you find that. I never heard of
it. Well, so you know how I found out about it? I was scrolling through our TV guide, and about every 10 rows, it had a banner that was like Spectrum, wow. Mad About You, Reboot, whatever, yeah. Like exclusive, Spectrum exclusive. And I was like, huh.
Huh,
so I don't know if you might have to have Spectrum right. cable to watch it.
Yeah, I watched that on occasion. I wasn't a huge fan of Mad About You. It was a little too cutesy for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good show. I want to say that it used to be on one of the...
It was on NBC.
It was like a lead into another show. Like, I want to say maybe it used to be on before Friends something like that.
And you know what's funny is that that... Talk about a windfall, because Seinfeld was going off. I think it was Seinfeld, because what else would it have been? I think it was Seinfeld, but because Seinfeld was going off, NBC was so, desperate that they gave Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt $1 million an episode for the final season.
Oh, to stay on.
To stay on. Yeah. I mean, talk about a windfall. But yeah, so that'll be interesting to see. Now, I do want to mention a few other shows. You and I both, and this is currently on, and it's getting really good. I hope if people have never watched this show, it's on HBO. I love Succession.
Oh, yeah, we've been watching it.
Yeah, and it's been getting very good. Brian Cox is a very well-known British actor, plays the kind of the patriarch of a media family, very similar to maybe like a Rupert Murdoch. Who owns a media empire run? That's the foundation is a right wing news operation like Fox. So very really good acting, some really good plot twists. I'm really enjoying Succession. If you've never seen it, and it's also produced by Adam McKay and Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
So and they did that movie a couple of years ago that talked about the stock market as well. This is kind of similar to that. I love the Great British Baking Show.
Oh,
which is on Netflix.
I cannot get into that.
I love that show. What else do I have on my list here? The Crown is coming back in November. I think November 17th with a new queen. We are now in the 60s.
Yeah. And so time is moving on.
Yeah. So now the old, what was it? Claire Foy, her name was.
Yeah. Claire Foy.
She played the young Queen Elizabeth. And now what's the actress's name? Who just won
the
favorite?
Woman who won the Oscar.
That's terrible. Olivia something. I feel terrible now.
Oh,
look on your internet machine.
You know what? I have a computer right here in my
There
house,
you go.
So I can tell you.
Yeah, we should have known her name.
I know. I can't believe I don't know her name.
I'll continue. So the Crown is coming back.
Olivia Colman.
Right. There you go. Coleman. Yeah, she'll be playing the Queen Elizabeth now in the 60s. So that's going to be something to see.
Well, do you know who else is joining that cast?
Oh, I heard, but who?
It's Gillian Anderson. Remember
right. She's playing She's playing Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be very. Yeah. Scully from.
Scully.
From X-Files. Let's see what else. I've been watching. It hasn't been as good in previous seasons, but this is the final season. So I will watch it premiering on September 27th. Silicon Valley on HBO, which is a Mike Judge show who did King of the Hill. What else do we have here? Oh, The Kominsky Method on Netflix, which I enjoyed with Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin. It certainly won a lot of Emmys the last couple of seasons.
Isn't, what's his name on that too? Paul Reiser? Is he
Paul Reiser? Yeah, I think he is on that. Yeah, comes out October 25th. Ray Donovan is coming back on Showtime.
Oh, geez, I didn't even know that was still on.
Yeah, November 17th. And I think that is about it. But as you can see, a majority of the shows that we have been talking about here, and I'm glad we actually had a nice mix of both cable shows and streaming shows and network shows, and even PBS is here. So I think we've done a nice little job. Oh, here's one. Now, are you a big fan of Paul Rudd?
Oh, yeah. I did see he's got a show on his Netflix.
Netflix as well. October 18th. Yeah. It's called Living With Yourself, and he sort of plays the same character with two different personalities. I guess that's the short, elevator version of it. So I'm going to certainly try that one out.
Mm-hmm. I will too, for sure.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. It's already been on now. I think this is just totally, talk about nostalgia, but the Brady Bunch renovation show on HGTV.
I know. I feel like, is that a series? I feel like they could show that in like one episode.
No, yeah.
Like,
well, they certainly can.
These fixer upper shows. Yeah. They do one house in one episode.
Yeah. No, they're going to string this out.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And all I have to say is I was shocked when I saw Marsha Brady.
Why?
Well, she's like
so old.
She's 63 years old. She was wearing these giant Buddy Holly glasses. And I went, oh, my gosh. You talk about feeling old. That one clicked it for me right there.
Right.
But yeah, I think, as I said before, Succession is a show that's good. We talked about The Dark Crystal. Oh, interesting. I haven't seen it yet. It is on now. Sacha Baron Cohen is in a Netflix series called The Spy.
Oh, haven't even heard of it.
Yeah, so I'd like to maybe check that one out.
I like him. He's funny.
Me too. So we talked about The Spy, The Great Baking Show, the country music documentary. Emily and I both are looking forward to American Horror Story 84. I'm going to try out Emergence on ABC, Modern Family, Evil on CBS. We both talked about The Politician on Netflix, another Ryan Murphy show. The Breaking Bad sequel will be on Netflix October 11th, El Camino. So there's some cool things coming up, and obviously in 2020.
I think from here, this day forward, we should just call it Breaking Badder, because I don't know why they didn't think of that. Right.
And then in 2020, we do get, it's not the final season, but although I don't know if they're not calling it the final season of Better Call Saul, but they're certainly saying that, when last season ended, and the show sadly won't be back until 2020, so it's almost going to be a year and a half. When it ended, the Saul character played so magnificently
you're talking about Breaking Bad.
No, I'm talking about Better Call Saul.
No, you can't talk about the ending of Better Call Saul.
I'm not going to talk about it. And I'll just say is that you get the first hint that the Jimmy character is going to become Saul. That's all I could say, is that you start to see the transformation. And so I don't know if this upcoming season in 2020 will be the last, but we certainly now see the beginning of the shift of Jimmy, who certainly has, he's certainly kind of a slippery guy, but seems to have a heart. And especially in his relationship with his girlfriend. But at the end of last season, we suddenly saw some of that heart gain a new layer of callus on it, even to the point that his girlfriend noticed. So nothing major yet, but certainly the hints of the transformation. So we'll see. Be interesting to see what happens on Better Call Saul. But as usual, I'm a TV junkie. So are you. I was raised on television. It was my brother and my sister and my babysitter. And, 40 some years later, it still is. And so, I'm looking forward to some shows, but it's just not as easy to know what's going on.
I know.
My gosh. I mean,
we need to stay on top of these things.
Thank God for the internet machine, because they do the work that we don't have. Now, you said TV Guide. Do you have TV Guide? Do you still get TV Guide?
No, not TV Guide. It's the guide.
On your program guide.
The program guide.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, very good. I have to say, I think that we've certainly tapped in some of the shows that people should be hopefully keep an eye out for or should be interested in, and hopefully we'll make a mark this year, and we'll see next year at the Emmy Award nominations. So just keep your remote handy and keep clicking, and we will talk to you next time, Emily.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, take care. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, episode number 173. Thank you so much for finding the podcast wherever it is you find your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe there, rate this podcast, and by all means, tell your friends if you like what you're hearing to find us as well. Your loyalty and your fandom is much appreciated. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You have been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.